tired because I could not sleep. You see, my parents were early adopters. And I don't mean adopting children. I mean adopting technology. Now, the bad news is that this will age me. But when I was born, people had radios, not televisions. If I look at your homes today, you've got all these televisions there. But my parents were one of the first on the block that bought a television. And I'm going to hope that they were concerned about what I might watch, as parents should be today, right? And so they had me see a documentary from Africa. A documentary about man-eating lions. Now, those of you out there who are meat eaters, what kind of meat do you prefer? Now, I'm not talking about chicken versus sheep or cow. I'm talking about within a brand. Don't you prefer the younger meat? Isn't that supposed to be the delicacy, the younger it is? Well, apparently, that's the way it is with lions. They prefer young meat. And those that have developed this taste for human flesh, according to the documentary that I was carefully watching, the lions would sneak up at night to the hut and then break through the side, grab a little boy, just like me, by the head with their jaws, drag them out, and then eat them. And I couldn't sleep. I couldn't sleep. Now, you know, I knew, even as a young man, that Africa was not next to Berrien Springs, Michigan, which is where I grew up. I knew that there were oceans, at least one, between us and Africa. What I didn't know was, do lions swim? Can they swim? Well, I don't know. There's a picture right here. Had I seen this picture, I would have been concerned. Can they swim? I didn't know. And so I worried. Now, that was not the only barrier between me and the man-eaters. My father built the house that we grew up in. He built this thing like a fortress. You could drive a truck on top of the roof of our house. I am not kidding. You could have a truck sit on top of this house. There's cinder block walls, and then it had a flat roof. It wasn't my father who told me you could drive a truck. I knew this by my own observation because flat roofed homes are not a good design. If you're thinking about building a house, don't make the roof flat. So when my brother and I were young adults, we were building a pitched roof over the flat roof. And so I got to see how this thing was built, and it was really built strongly. So I'm sitting there saying, can a lion eat through cinder block? You know, like it tore through the side of the hut. Can it do that with a cinder block thing? I wasn't certain. You know, there's another thing about Berrien Springs and Africa. If you were, in fact, swimming from Africa to Berrien Springs, Michigan, I assume you'd come up at Florida, right? Well, there are a lot of young boys between Florida and Berrien Springs, Michigan. Could the lion actually find my home, come to the window by my door, and eat me? I didn't know, and thus I worried. And so I would be a participant in this t-shirt. Roses are red, romance is dead, every day I suffer from existential dread. Now, when I was under 10, romance was not part of my thoughts. But existential dread, well, that was part of it. I was concerned about man-eaters. Now, of course, you're sitting there saying, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. Why would you be concerned about man-eating lions? Well, let me ask you, you don't have to raise your hand, how many of you suffer from existential dread today? I still do. I mean, over some of the most ridiculous things. This last Monday, I worked more than 11 hours. The Monday before that, I worked over 13 hours. And I remember standing by my car as I'm leaving work. It was either one of those days or the next day. And some sort of dread came over me that I wasn't working hard enough. And I thought, you're kidding me? You know, why would I feel dread that someone would think I wasn't working hard enough? And I thought, well, that certainly can't be coming from God. You know, God doesn't, he's not asking me to work harder. This must be some sort of demonic impulse that I have this dread. But how many of you have this sort of dread about things? Well, we're going to talk about dread today. As you know, the pastor's had a series on minor prophets. He spoke about Amos. David spoke about Hosea. And I'm going to give you a twofer here today. Not just one minor prophet, but I'm going to talk to you about two minor prophets, Amos meeting Jonah. And I got to tell you, Jonah's a guy who sort of exemplifies the dread, but not at this point in his life, right? Jonah, at one point, is feeling great. Do you remember from Kings what they said about him? You know Jonah's story, but you might not know about this text. King Jeroboam II was the one who restored the boundaries of Israel from Lebo Hamath to the Sea of Arabah in accordance with the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, spoken through his servant Jonah, son of Amittai, the prophet from Gath-Hepher. So, what's this mean? Well, this means that God's people, Israel, had not been faithful to him. They had had many battles with opponents, and the opponents were just beating them, taking their property away, taking territory. Israel was reduced from what it used to be, and then things turned around. Jeroboam, too, was a king that was doing God's will. Jonah was prophesying that Jeroboam would defeat his enemies, and they did. Bang, bang, bang. They defeated all of these enemies. They expanded the borders to what they used to be. Things were great. Now, can you imagine what it was like to be Jonah in those days? He was a prophet, but he was a prophet whose prophecies lined up with the national interest. You know, you look at these minor prophets, and even the major prophets of the Old Testament, generally, they are prophesying against their country, that some enemy country is going to come take them over. It's like a prophet in here saying, oh, you know, the Chinese, they're going to take over the United States. The Russians, they're going to take over the United States. Oh, ISIS, oh, they're going to clean your clock. Yeah. That's a real popular thing, right? Instead, though, Jonah was there, hey, the United States is going to win. We're going to defeat the enemies. And in fact, that is what happened. So Jonah was a national hero, cheerleader. No doubt he didn't have to fight because he was saying, hey, we're going to do well. They wouldn't have to have him out there fighting. But then things changed, right? Jonah 1:1-2. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it because its wickedness has come up before me. Once again, national pride, no problem. The Assyrians, Nineveh was the capital of Assyria, the Assyrians were enemies of Israel, nasty, nasty people. And so saying bad things about Syria, well, that wasn't a problem, right? The problem was that God had said to him, go. Go to Nineveh. Now, I got to tell you, friends, you don't really want to offend the Assyrians. They had some very nasty habits. One of their nasty habits was if they didn't like what you said, they weren't exactly proponents of freedom of speech, they would take you and they would drop you on a sharpened stick. That's pleasant. Right? Or another thing they'd like to do is if they didn't like what you were saying, if they were building a wall, they just build you inside. They just put you inside the wall and then complete the wall around you. So you die in there. So Jonah was heading toward Nineveh to tell them things that they wouldn't like to hear. And he was thinking about being dropped on a sharpened stick or put in a wall or something like that. And then, what? He had this other fear that it was all for naught. He said this later on, Jonah 4:2. He prayed to the Lord, O Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home? That is why I was so quick to flee to Tarshish. I knew that you were a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger, abounding in love, and a God who relents from sending calamity. He didn't think God was going to do what God said he was going to do. If he's just going to go out and destroy the Assyrians, go for it. But he had this impression that he wasn't going to do it. Now, I don't know why Jonah said that, because when it came to King Jeroboam II,
and Jonah's prophecies, they destroyed their enemies. God did what Jonah had prophesied. But Jonah thought that this wasn't going to work out right. And so Jonah had existential dread. Actually, he had real danger. He had this fear. He had this fear. He had this fear, the kind of fear that maybe you feel, that things are not going to turn out right. Well, I want to start talking to you about lions because I want to get back to the subject of lions. Lions are very important to this sermon. Do you know how lions hunt? Do you know how lions hunt? You see, I've got you in the middle. You are standing for quarry. Whatever it is they want to eat, they get in between. They get in between the big old male lion with the mane and the big roar, right? He's on one side. And then the lionesses get on the other side. Now, friends, I know, guys, you all know this intuitively, that the females are the more dangerous of the species, that they're the smart ones who are dangerous. Well, that's the way it is with lions. It is the lionesses that are really the hunters, the real danger. And so what happens is the quarry gets in between, right? And the male lion roars. And then what happens? The quarry runs away from the roar and into the jaws of the lionesses, which take them out. What gets you killed? Being a coward. Running away from the roar. Revelation talks about this in one of the most curious and astonishing texts in the Bible. But the cowardly, Revelation 21:8, but the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters and all liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. This little tagline, the second death, means this is the end for them. This is the permanent. These are the people who are lost forever. There's no chance. They're done. And the first thing the Bible says about them, the first group, is that they're cowardly. Maybe it has something to do with the next word, which is unbelieving. But look at this. In the list of bad people who get lost, who are lost, cowardly are listed before the vile and the murderers. Now, if I were listing bad people, I wouldn't put people who are simply frightened ahead of vile and murderers. So why is that? Well, you remember Jonah's fate. He runs away because he's afraid. He's a coward. And a whale eats him, right? Now, did you ever think about his fate? If he hadn't turned to God, not only is he a coward, but how is he going to die? He's going to be eaten by his food, right? I mean, when you think about fish, humans eat fish. Fish don't eat humans, right? I mean, maybe sharks haven't gotten the message. But in essence, humans eat fish. He would be killed, eaten by his food. Now, for those of you who are McDonald's fans, it's like your obituary says, he was killed by a cow. Chick-fil-A people, well, she was pecked by chickens. You know, what kind of a humiliating end is that? I mean, so Jonah is a coward, and he's going to end up being eaten by his food. In my case, I'd be eaten by a veggie burger. I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm choked by my veggie burger. The whole idea is that the people who are running away from God, who are cowards, are headed toward this embarrassing end. And so let me ask you, what makes you tremble? What causes you to have existential dread? What creates fear in your life? Well, I've got several candidates, right? You know, you hear any roaring about your job, your health, your marriage, your finances? Those are top candidates, right, for existential dread, for fear. You know, when I was thinking I'm not working hard enough or long enough. I was a roar in my ear, a dread. You know, I was feeling badly about this. That had to do with my job, right? So why is it sin? Why is cowardliness listed as the number one category? Is it because it's a lack of trust in God? Is that part of it? You know, the next term was the unbelieving. Is that it? Well, friends, let me suggest to you that in your life, Satan will roar. Satan, and I don't mean Satan personally, because Satan is not omnipresent. It's going to be his minions, you know. It's going to be your satanic impulses that are going to cause dread and fear and problems in your life over your job, your health, your marriages, your finances. That will happen. But you know what else? God might roar, right? God might roar in your life on those same topics of your job, your health, your marriage, your finances. And this is where we get the twofer. This is where Amos comes in. Amos meets Jonah. If you look at Amos chapter 3, it's a very interesting chapter. God starts out talking to his people. He says, hey, guys, I saved you. Remember, I saved you from the Egyptians. I saved you. I saved you. I saved you. You need to remember that. And then God goes through several very obvious things. He says, you know, this is obviously the result of this. This is obviously the result of that. He says things such as, birds don't just fly into traps. Traps don't just jump up and get birds. He's got lots of stories about hunting and sort of natural cause and effect things with regard to hunting. It reminds me of the lions hunting. And then he says this in verse 7. Surely the sovereign Lord does nothing without revealing his plan to his servants the prophets. The lion has roared, who will not fear? The sovereign Lord has spoken, who can but prophesy? Friends, I think this is the key to this unlocking of the problem of existential dread and fear in your life. Who is roaring here? It's God. He says, the lion has roared, who will not fear? The sovereign Lord has spoken. And so there's a parallel between the lion roaring and God speaking. Now, he says, who will not fear? Friends, when you hear the lion roar, fear is natural. I don't think there's any sin in fear. If you feel dread, hey, I don't think that's sin. If you have feelings of fear, I don't think that's sin. I think that is the result of either Satan roaring in your life or God roaring in your life. But look at what it says about the roar. It says, surely the sovereign Lord does nothing without revealing his plan to his servants, the prophets. He says that when there's roaring going on in your life, when there is danger in your life, when there is fear about the future, God will reveal to you what he has in mind. God has your future mapped out. God knows what will happen, and he will reveal this to you. And then he says, the sovereign Lord has spoken. Who can but prophesy? God has spoken to you about the matter of fear. It's not being afraid of the roar. It is what you do in response. See, he says the natural thing is for you to prophesy. What's prophesy? Well, it's reflecting God's will. And so God says, when you hear the roar, it's okay to be afraid, but what's not okay is to run away from God, to be a coward. This is what God has in mind. When you hear the roar, run toward him. Run toward his plan. Run toward what he has revealed to you is the solution. God has given you the authority. He has told you how this will come out. He has given you confidence about the future. Instead of running toward those dangerous lionesses, run toward the source of the roar, that old lion who can't catch you, right? He says, run toward me,
because I am the author of your salvation. I am your protector. Jonah finally got it, right? Instead of running away, he did God's will. He didn't do it very well. What an inspiration he is for us. We don't do God's will very well. Jonah was a character in many respects. But friends, this is it. God says, if you have fear, if you have dread, come to me. I'm the solution to your problems. Thank you.
Bruce, check 1, 2. All right. Thank you, Bruce. I love that message. Wanted to respond to what you said, because God is at once our good, good Father. We sung about that last month, right? And he's also this ferocious, untamable power that's somehow good. And we were just reading about this week in our house, how it's actually hard to comprehend who God is. We use these things like a lion. We know what that is. He's like a lion. Of course, he's not. He's something altogether unimaginable. And somehow his presence changes everything around him. So I just want us to seek God and dwell on that. Dwell on the powerful nature of God, and also the comfort we can have and the safety we have within his reach. Count. fall fresh on us. We need your presence. Your kingdom come. Your will be done here as in heaven. Spirit of God, fall fresh on us. We need your presence.
Sing to him.
Your kingdom come, your will.
See you next week. Thanks for coming.